Okay, I have with me today Colonel Douglas McGregor. We're going to be talking about the Russia-Ukraine situation, the United States provoking China as it messes with Taiwan, and now today, aircraft carriers and jets being sent to the Korean Peninsula. Colonel McGregor, thank you for joining me today.
Sure.
So before I jump in, I'll be leaving some information down below about my newsletter, also about Colonel McGregor and this month's giveaway. But let's jump right into the first question. I think at this point we can confidently say that Russia has taken Bakhmut, or at least has taken enough of the city and the territory to claim victory. Do you think at this point Zelensky and Ukraine will finally order military personnel to fall back? Or are they going to dig in and hold out to the very end because this particular battle has become so publicized in the media?
Well, first of all, everyone is mired in this giant sea of mud in eastern Ukraine. Until the mud dries, the moisture ends, and you get hard ground, there will be no major troop movements of any kind. I think the notion of a Ukrainian offensive in April, unless there is a miracle, the sun comes out and stays out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and dries out the soil, they really cannot commit large ground forces, especially all these new tanks that they claim they're going to have, along with anything else, frankly, that moves on the ground. So right now, everyone is stuck with the sea of mud. Secondly, we now know from remarks made by Prigozhin, the man who heads up this thing called the Wagner Group, which is about a 30, 35,000 man professional military organization committed to Russian national interests, has historically operated overseas, primarily not inside Russia, but because of the wars in Russia. He's made it very clear that General Sotovikin, who was the man that was brought in late summer, early fall to sort of reorganize the Russian chain of command, reorganize the forces, begin assimilating the reservists and so forth, that he from the very beginning recognized that Bakhmut would be a very useful device to encourage the Ukrainians to commit forces in great numbers to it. Bakhmut has always been very important. This is the second point. It's always been a hub for rail lines, roads, communications, warehouses, factories, all of which have military utility. The fear in Kyiv has always been, if we lose Bakhmut, then the keystone in the edifice of the defense of the Donbas is gone. It will be very hard to maintain the lines of defense that they currently have once Bakhmut is out of their possession. The Russians could have seized this place much earlier. And what we now know, it was a deliberate decision not to do so. Let the Ukrainians occupy it and let them bring in tens of thousands of soldiers that then could be converted to corpses. And this is very, very frankly what's happened. The Russians have relied heavily on this enormous ISR strike capability, the ability to link your terrestrial platforms and space-based platforms that provide you with instantaneous intelligence, i.e. targeting data, to your various guns, artillery that is either tube artillery, rocket artillery, tactical ballistic missiles, and so forth. It may be now that the utility of Bakhmut from that standpoint has been exhausted. And the Russians may simply close it off. But as I understand it, somewhere it's between 7 and 10% of the urban area that is to the northwest has some Ukrainians left in it. But ultimately, as the ground dries, Bakhmut becomes important for the use of the Russians in order to move forces forward in north and west. Because it's, if you look at the map, it's not that far from Kyiv. And it's very close, frankly, in geographic terms to Kharkov. So you have Bakhmut is the new center of gravity for the Russians, if you will, in this sense. And that's where the war is headed. And as I pointed out to someone the other day, they said, well, why haven't the Russians destroyed all the bridges across the Dnieper River? Well, because they plan to use them, because those bridges will support Russian traffic. So I think we can see where things will go, but they're not going to move dramatically until the May-June timeframe. historically, June is when you've had most of the major offensives in the region, certainly in modern times. That is since the age of Napoleon, because you're not going to get far through the sea of mud once it establishes itself. And then you have to deal with this sort of crushing winter historically. Well, we haven't had much winter by Russian standards, but we certainly have the sea of mud. So that's got to go away. Then I think we'll see dramatic movement.
Okay. That's interesting, because everybody has been waiting for this massive offensive and this counteroffensive, but then Ukraine's going to get to it first. So the mud really is the delay. I wanted to pick up on something that General Milley said this week. He said, and he kind of caught himself, he said that Ukraine cannot win this war this year. And he made sure to, you know, correct himself on that. So basically, he's now given himself the rest of 2023 to not win, according to Zelensky's definition, which is to have all Russia out of Ukraine. I don't know that that's even possible, but do you think that he's starting to set up a narrative that Ukraine is starting to lose this? Or is he just being honest that, hey, it's their definition and we know they're not going to meet that? Where do you think General Milley was heading with a comment like that?
Well, even a broken clock is right twice a day. And so it's not impossible that there is some measure of honesty sometimes in his remarks. As a general rule, I would write off anything the man says. He's a purely political animal who exists as a mouthpiece for the administration and ultimately will say or do whatever he's told. That's why he got the job. That's why most of these people become chairman. They don't become chairman because of any demonstrated character, competence, or intelligence. They're there because they're people that will do whatever they're told and say whatever they're told to say. So I don't think I'd pay too much attention to him. Now, having said that, if he is setting up a narrative, it's to protect himself more than anything else. I mean, that's his habit. You know, he's like everybody else that wants to be successful in Washington. You put on your Teflon suit, nothing sticks, and you shift responsibility to others and let them pay the price for accountability. I don't know that Ukraine will even exist as a nation state by the end of 2023. I think it's essentially a dead issue right now. Conditions inside Ukraine are horrific. The losses are horrific. We simply lie. We don't tell the truth. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Telegraph in England, whatever you want to pick out as a newspaper or a news outlet in the West, has assimilated the narrative that comes out of Langley and London and MI6. The Ukrainians are winning. They can still win. They can still win. Well, things aren't going well, but they can still win. And eventually it'll be, we no longer have contact with anyone in Kiev. By the way, in today's other news, we're continuing to work hard to start war with China.
Yeah, let's jump into that. So we have the new House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy. He's now visited the president of Taiwan. China was vehemently against this. They condemned this. They warned of consequences. Many people, even back in D.C., wondered whether he should do this. The only person that really applauded him was former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Why do they continue to provoke China? Is it to show dominance and hope that there's no consequences? Or what is the act? I don't understand the action behind it.
China is a useful instrument, particularly to the armed services, especially the Navy and the Marines. It has appeal to politicians on the Hill who always act irresponsibly. They're never held accountable for anything they say or do. China, it's easy to stand up and hurl abuse at China. You know, someone the other day tried to ask one of the senators, I've forgotten who it was, who likes to talk about China as this great evil empire, about the Uyghurs. And the Uyghurs are, of course, this Turkic Muslim people. They're between 11 and 13 million of them. And they said, well, you know, the Saudis sent a delegation of clerics and governmental representatives to China and were given total support and carte blanche to visit the area where the Uyghurs live, to go into these so-called concentration camps and see what was happening. And they came back and reported that the majority of the Uyghurs that were being held in detention were Uyghurs that had returned from fighting with ISIS and were therefore judged as dangerous Islamists. The Chinese are as worried about Islamists as we are and their horrible impact on civilization. And the rest of the people that are there with them are either related to them or supportive of them insofar as they are stressing their Islamist views. The rest of the population, which is 90, 95 to 98% of the Uyghur population, is not part of this and is therefore not involved in this. Well, Sanders said, well, I know nothing about that. Well, of course he doesn't know anything about it, doesn't want to hear anything about it. It's necessary for us, as we've learned over the last several decades, to demonize whomever we fight. I mean, I could take you all the way back to the Spanish-American War, and the Spaniards were by no means horrific criminals, killing, murdering, and mistreating everyone in sight when they had an empire, and we drove them out of Cuba. They, you know, we've done the same thing during the First World War. We had a population in this country that at the time, probably a third of them were at least descended from Germans. There was very little support inside the United States for war with Germany in 1914, 15, 16, 17. So what happened? Well, the British printed lots of lies about the Germans, which were readily picked up in all the Western newspapers. The banks got involved, and they produced this tremendous propaganda campaign to demonize Germans and the Kaiser. Well, that worked enough to help justify the war. Now, we all found out when it was over, the whole thing had been a travesty and a fraud, and that's why you had nothing but Republicans opposed to overseas interventions in office for the next 12 years after we finally got rid of Woodrow Wilson. My point is that this is the issue with China. We don't need in current and future wars this enormous, what I would call Midway Jutland fleet construct, this massive fleet of large capital ships. Those days are over. Aircraft carriers and most of these larger capital ships are only useful in what we now call essentially permissive environments. Low-intensity conflict. What that means is that your opponent has no means of really attacking you from ashore. Your opponent doesn't have access to modern technology, because if he does, he's going to neutralize those surface ships in short order or even sink them. And this is the problem we have with China right now. The Chinese have invested very heavily in those intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance platforms. I mean, this goes back to the silly nonsense about the dumb balloon. The Chinese have over 30 satellites orbiting this planet. A substantial number of them have military application. They can also look down on the ground anywhere in the world and read the names on gravestones, which is what ours can do. In other words, they can also tune in and listen to what Joe Biden says to Dr. Jill at night before he goes to bed in the White House. I mean, these things exist. That raised questions about, well, if this is what you've got, what does the balloon do? It's absurd. Well, the problem we've got now in the South China Sea, all over the Pacific coast with China, is that if we try to move in with naval power at close range, and that means at least within 150 to 200 nautical miles, we're not only going to be tracked, we're going to be targeted and potentially damaged or sunk. So this is a huge problem. This is not the Imperial Japanese Navy or Air Force or Army, however. The Chinese are not massing forces anywhere to invade anyone. The Chinese are certainly not going to block the Strait of Malacca, which is absolutely vital and essential to them and the importation of oil and food, as well as a way for them to export. This is all nonsense. We keep saying, well, the Chinese are bullying their neighbors. Well, they've had some disputes with the Vietnamese with fishing boats, and the Vietnamese promptly sent them on their way and effectively threatened the Chinese with military action. Well, the Chinese left, and there was so much resentment and hatred of Chinese a few years ago in Vietnam that ultimately the leadership of Vietnam had to ask Xi, who is the de facto emperor of China, to remove his Chinese citizens from Vietnam. Chinese planes and ships showed up and pulled all the Chinese out. Then the Vietnamese proceeded to burn Chinese factories. Was there a war with Vietnam? No. Chinese are not interested in war. From the Chinese vantage point, conflict is very bad for business. So what's their focus? Well, they say, well, the Chinese are trying to conquer all of Asia. No, they're trying to build a commercial system that allows them to trade with everybody on the Eurasian continent. That means everyone from France to Tokyo. That means everyone from Beijing all the way down to Riyadh or Yemen on the Arabian Peninsula. They want to build the rail lines, the terminals. Now, this is an enormous undertaking, and we have decided that this is threatening to us. And the only threat that I can see that it presents is the threat of commercial competition, because if they can succeed across Central Asia to Europe, that suddenly reduces their dependence on the sea. And you see, our only trump card in this competition militarily really is the submarine fleet, because we have the capacity to stop everything going in or coming out of China. And that's another reason why the Chinese are doubling down on building this new commercial construct. And they've got lots of willing participants, because Iran and India, even Pakistan, along with all the Central Asian republics, now Turkey, the Europeans, everybody's become very sick and tired of us. And they don't particularly care for us to tell them that they may not trade with China. Yeah. And so that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. So just this morning, the Pentagon announced that they are ordering a B-52 bomber, as well as an aircraft carrier, to head to the Korean Peninsula. From the intel that I gathered from a couple of different reports, it's basically to put pressure on Kim Jong-un to quit firing missiles over Japan and towards South Korea. But do you think that this is also to get more U.S. military power in the area of China?
Well, North Korea has never fired any missiles aimed at South Korea, so let's get that straight. The missiles, when they fired them, all go into the ocean, and they've generally been fired into the Sea of Japan. Occasionally, they fired a couple of missiles just to demonstrate their ability to do so over Japan, so that the missiles splash down on the other side of the main islands of Hokkaido. I don't think the North Koreans want a war with anybody. I think they continually behave this way in the hopes that someone will pay them money to stop or give them food to stop. I think that they would like to be recognized as a significant player on the world stage, when, of course, they aren't. I mean, I don't know where the population is now. It was about 24 million and maybe down to 22 million or less. I mean, the conditions in that country for human beings are absolutely appalling. The regime's in trouble. At some point, even the Koreans, who are brilliant at enduring incredible misery and oppression, I think will wake up and turn on the regime. It hasn't happened yet, but more of them know what's going on in the South than have ever known before. So I think that's part of it. But as far as we're concerned, what are we going to accomplish? I'm not sure. The aircraft carrier is one of these things that is very, very inspiring to Americans at home. The news media will take you to a carrier. We're on the USS, whatever it is, which is 150 miles off the coast of North Korea. And you watch the jets take off and you watch the jets land and you see these beautiful pictures of the ocean and these ships and you feel great. The people ashore aren't paying any attention at all. They could care less. It's invisible to them and it does nothing. But it costs us a lot of money. A lot of resources and a lot of time. Then there's the B-52. And the B-52 is a different character because everybody knows it can be armed with nuclear weapons. And there's always a chance that the B-52 flies over and it does drop something and it's a nuclear weapon. That's dangerous. Now, in the case of North Korea, I don't think they have the capacity to shoot it down yet. But today, the Russians can certainly shoot it down. And I think increasingly in the future, most of the air defense technology that the Russians have developed will be in the hands of Chinese and others. The key thing to remember, is that North Korea is really useful to Russia as a device that causes us to divert distract resources, time, and effort away from Ukraine. And Russia has historically been supportive of North Korea. They were prepared to walk away from it, especially when President Trump recognized that he could cut a deal, if you will, thanks to Mr. Xi in Beijing, as well as Moon, who was then the president of South Korea, to effectively get us out of Korea, potentially neutralize the place, at which point everybody in Asia, including the Chinese, would breathe a huge sigh of relief to be rid of North Korea, because everybody knew at that point the North would be absorbed by the South. Things have changed because of Ukraine. There is no incentive for the Russians to assist us in divesting ourselves from the North Korean problem. So on the contrary, their access to new missile technology has improved under Putin over the last year. And I think Putin is delighted to see them fire some of these missiles that are now more accurate and can fly further and can carry a bigger payload than the ones he had a few years ago, because it puts us on the defense to some extent. But is there going to be a war? No. The North Koreans aren't going to risk that. That would mean their annihilation. There's not going to be a war with China, not unless we start it. And I worry a great deal about the use of our naval power in various places like the Strait of Taiwan, because it could inadvertently provoke an incident. The Chinese, for instance, announced that thanks to Kevin McCarthy's visit, they are now going to stop and search commercial vessels in the Strait of Taiwan. The Chinese have never stopped a commercial vessel. Never. Never interrupted commercial traffic. That's the last thing in the world they want to do. They may decide to stop warships that are foreign that move through the Taiwan Strait. I don't know. But it would be wise under the circumstances for us to wait a week, let the Chinese run this drill, and then stop before we send anything else through the Strait of Taiwan. My fear is we won't do that, and we'll deliberately confront them in the Strait of Taiwan. It would be analogous to the Chinese fleet confronting American military power in the Florida Straits. If we had large numbers of Chinese warships, Chinese aircraft carrier, backed by Chinese subs in the Atlantic and the Caribbean, and we began conducting, and they began conducting exercises in the Straits of Florida, what would we do? We would not be happy. We'd be very unhappy. You know, we've been conducting exercises for years, 50 nautical miles off the coast of St. Petersburg in the Baltic. Now, if you're a Russian, you're not very happy about that. How would we feel if the Russians conducted similar exercises off the coast of Boston?
Yeah.
You know, we see everything through this distorting lens that says we're always right. We are inherently morally superior to everyone else. Anyone who challenges us is evil and is in the wrong. Well, you keep this up long enough, you're going to end up in a war against people that don't really want to fight you, but will all band together to fight us. And that's the problem right now. We're creating alliances against us.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your insight. I figured it didn't have much to do with North Korea. I mean, their citizens barely get 1,200 calories a day of food. It's illegal to grow food. Half the men are in the military, but have nothing to do. So that's where I wondered if maybe it was, you know, use North Korea as an excuse to get more aircraft carriers near China or something like that. Let's keep in mind,
you know, we've just signed an agreement to bring forces back to the Philippines.
Yes.
We're pushing back against China. We're showing them. Really? You know, quite frankly, I don't see any particular strategic value to setting up bases in the Philippines. First of all, the Philippine people were really not consulted on this. And frankly, they wanted us out of the country. We're now coming in on the grounds that somehow or another, we're going to protect them from China. Well, I don't see much evidence for an imminent Chinese invasion of the Philippines. The issue with China for almost everybody in Asia is that if you let them in the country to do business and you don't regulate it and control it, pretty soon the Chinese come in, the size of their population doubles and triples, and half the businesses in the country belong to them. That's the threat, In other words, it's not military. I don't know what we're doing, because we're allegedly stopping the Chinese from doing something. So he said, well, we have to stop those bases on the coral islands, these little reefs in the South China Sea. Look, take an admiral aside and ask him that in the event of a conflict, how long the Chinese installations on these tiny little strips of coral are going to last in a war. And his answer will be, we can annihilate those in 10 minutes. You know, this is all nonsense. So why are we doing these things? And you could come up with a whole range of explanations, but I'm afraid that there are too many people who are served by it, but the American people aren't going to benefit strategically from any of this activity.
Yeah. Okay. So Finland has now officially joined NATO. We've moved, you know, NATO closer to Russia, which Putin does not want. Do you think that there's going to be a future conflict between Russia and Finland, or is the main focus going to be on Ukraine?
Well, as long as Ukraine lasts, as long as the conflict persists, and as long as we insist on provisioning whatever remains in Ukraine with equipment, and as long as we ship in mercenaries or military advisors and provide them with critical intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance information and data, there is always the potential for an expanding conflict. I mean, that's quite real. The biggest danger, I think, right now is Poland. The Poles have convinced themselves that this is an opportunity to potentially regain control of parts of Western Ukraine that used to be formerly under Polish administration. In fact, if you go back for most of its history, Western Ukraine was under the Polish or Lithuanian occupation. Kiev was historically viewed as the outpost of Western civilization in Eastern Europe. Beyond Kiev, there were Tartars, Mongols, and Russians, nothing else. And as a result, Western Ukraine is fundamentally different culturally and linguistically in other ways because of this long-term Polish-Lithuanian influence. But barring a Polish intervention, I think it'll all fizzle out. In other words, entropy will take hold, and the Ukrainians will simply no longer have the wherewithal to do much. So the key is, do we prevent the Poles from intervening in any of this? Because that would be dangerous, and it would widen the scope of the campaign. Now, Finland. Finland has had good relations with the Russians, certainly since the end of the Second World War. The Russians have never shown any interest in going to war with the Finns. Most of my friends in Finland that I've known off and on for years always talked about the utility of driving into Russia to buy gas more cheaply at gas stations on the other side of the border than they are in Finland. Lots of Finns like to go down on the weekends to St. Petersburg, party, eat and drink to excess. You see drunken Finns all over the place in St. Petersburg. They have to load them on trucks and send them home. I do not know why all of a sudden the Finnish government did this, except to point out that what I would call, just as Soros has had an impact in terms of installing districts of attorney in the United States, Soros and more broadly globalist money, also money from us and other oligarchs, has contributed to the emergence of leaders in Western Europe who have been acting, frankly, against the interests of their own population for years. I mean, who would have thought that any German chancellor in his or her right mind would have opened Germany's borders to millions of effectively illegal immigrants pouring in from Africa, North Africa, and the Middle East? Why? Why would you do that? How does this work? They can't be assimilated. They don't want to assimilate. They cannot be employed in most cases. Some cases, yes, but in most, no, because they don't have the technical background and the education to do it. But that happened. Why? Well, you have to go back and look at the people that supported Merkel. You have a similar situation in France with Macron. Who is Macron? The bank teller from nowhere who automatically becomes president of France. I mean, it's bizarre. These people have not been acting in the interests of their own people. So we had this Finnish prime minister, this attractive young woman. She was very charming, and she became famous for stepping out of the disco long enough to tell everybody why we would stand by Ukraine until Russia was destroyed or something. Then she went back to dance in the disco. You know, who are these people? Are they completely crazy? Not completely, but they're certainly irresponsible, and they're not equal to the tasks assigned to them. Now, will Finland profit from its NATO membership? Seems doubtful. I think there's another huge reason that we're missing. Finnish neutrality worked. Austrian neutrality has worked. Neutrality is not a bad thing. Neutrality is often a very good solution. It would have worked brilliantly in Ukraine. The neutral states like Finland and Austria have profited enormously from being neutral, not allowing themselves to be dragged into these highly politicized conflicts that spill over into trade and economics. Unfortunately, they've now walked away from this advantage. I don't think the Austrians will, but the Finns have. Will they rethink all of this, reconsider? And what about the Swedes? I mean, I get things, emails constantly from people in Sweden saying, please come over and talk to us. Please come on our show and talk to us, because the Swedish people are beginning to figure out this is not a good thing. We weren't asked. There was no referendum. And there should have been. In a country like Sweden of, what, 8 million people or something, could have had a referendum on whether or not to join NATO. Why didn't they hold it? Because they didn't think they'd win it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I mean, just like, you know, our representatives are supposed to represent us. I think most Americans want to be out of war, but the politicians don't want to be. And that's probably what Finland is dealing with right now.
I'm sure some of your viewers watched this film years ago. Tom Hanks played the role of this famous congressman who almost single-handedly dragged us into Pakistan to support the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets. And there was a comment that he makes about getting elected. And he says, well, let's face it, voters don't win elections. Donors win elections. Everyone in Washington is listening to their donors. What happened to the people that are supposed to vote for them and decide their futures? Americans need to wake up. This democracy has become a meaningless facade, in my judgment. We are not represented in Washington. Remember Ralph Nader years ago? A lot of people didn't like Ralph Nader, said he was a Democrat. Well, I always liked Ralph Nader a great deal because he was a very honest man. And he kept looking into the camera and saying, wake up. Washington is occupied territory. Now, his argument at the time was about corporations, and he was right. Well, now it's about corporations and foreign lobbies and oligarchs who represent interests that are completely divorced from those of the American people. Can you explain to me why any American should march into eastern Ukraine and fight the Russians over it? Set aside all the emotion and sentiments, whatever exists. Why should we do that? I mean, this is reminiscent of Thomas Jefferson, who came to George Washington and wanted us to ally ourselves with the French Revolution. Said, they're Democrats like us. We need to unite and commit the world to democratic revolution. Well, Washington was polite to him, thanked him for his visit. Then he met with, you know, Alexander Hamilton. And he said, you know, I like Thomas Jefferson. He's a wonderful man, but he's insane. If we were to do such a stupid thing, he said, first of all, these French revolutionaries are not us. What we wanted and what they want are not the same. We have a republic, and we got there without murdering tens of thousands of people. We don't want that. And if we join them, well, then the Austrians and the Prussians and the Russians and virtually everybody else who has any armed forces will start landing in North America along with the British, march on us and destroy us. This is absurd. Well, this is the same mentality now. And most Americans don't know what's really happening on the ground in any of these places. And so it's easy to lie to them. And they've gotten into the habit of believing, sadly, what comes through the mainstream media. Most of it's just nonsense, falsehoods.
Yeah, well, that's why I try to counter that with the truth here on my channel. And, you know, President George Washington warned the American people, do not get involved in Europe and these European wars. It will drag America down. And And so far, he's been right about that. Colonel McGregor, thank you so much for being on today's show and sharing your insight and wisdom.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Steve. Bye-bye. Have a good Easter.
You too.